떡을 찌우는 프르 룸뚱프르 랑카토르그 룸뚝뚝 랑카토르그 찌우는 프르 룸뚱프르 랑카토르그 따따따따따 오까 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 랑카토르그 비비비비비 쭈까 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 랑카토르그 룸룸 랑카토르그
music or something there from Kurt Schwitters. Kurt Schwitters was a Dada artist from the 20th century, and this is from a compilation. Compilation called Dada, Ante Dada, Mertz. And I'm speaking right now. This is a piece that's part of a exhibition that's currently at the Beinecke Library in New Haven at Yale University. The exhibition is Beyond Words, Experimental Poetry in the Avant-Garde. I'm speaking with Kevin Repp, the curator of European Modern Books and Manuscripts. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure, and I know that you were on the show a couple of years ago, because you also did that great show on literature of East Germany.
Right, East German Zombies Dot, yes.
That was a great show, and this is a great show as well. Why don't you talk a little bit, just for people who might not know, the Beinecke and your role, your curatorial role at the Beinecke, and sort of how this show grew out of it.
Sure. I'm one of seven curators at Beinecke Library, and we're all specialized in different sort of subject areas, and my area is modern European, continental modern Europe. And over the past 10 years or so, I've really come to focus in my collecting on the post-war avant-garde in Europe. It's become kind of a passion of mine. It wasn't what I set out to do. I thought I was going to do modernist things, because Beinecke has such fantastic collections of modernism. But when I got to Europe, I was just blown away by all this new material that no one's collecting and no one knows anything about, really. And it's just beautiful.
It is so beautiful. That is very true. Why don't you talk just sort of broadly about the scope of this show?
Yeah, this show is devoted entirely to experimental poetry. So, in particular, I'm focusing on two different kinds of experimental poetry: sound poetry, which is what we were listening to at the beginning. Kurt Schwitters is sort of one of the great fathers, if you will, of sound poetry. And the other is visual poetry, so poetry that derives its message and meaning from the visual cues that you get more than, or in addition to, or completely excluding words. So the name of the show is Beyond Words for that reason.
And you have a special event happening this Friday. Why don't you talk about that?
Yes, I'm very excited about it. One of the experimental poets whose papers I've collected and who's featured in the exhibition, Alain Ariat-Misson, is coming to Yale to perform one of his public poems. This is a kind of poetry he's been doing since 1967, which involves carrying giant letters, carrying a word out into the street, essentially. What happens is, in this case, the word that will be carried out into the street is transculturalism, which has 16 letters. So we'll have 16 brave volunteers who have agreed to carry the letters out into the streets of New Haven and across Yale campus, and then to rearrange amongst themselves to spell various other words that might have significance in front of particular buildings, for example, and that we might go past. So I have no idea what words will come out of it, but I'm very excited about this. I also want to mention that the week after he does the Yale public poem, he will be doing another poem in Paris, starting at the Pompidou Center and going all through Paris. So we're really privileged that he's showing us this honor, I think. And it'll be fun, besides.
So if people want to see this, what would they just sort of show up and follow along parade-like? in a way?
Yeah, people are welcome to show up at the beginning and follow along, or, you know, if they encounter the poem somewhere on campus or in the streets of New Haven, certainly welcome to follow us along. Some of the poems that Alain did in the 60s and early 70s, he worked a lot in Spain. He did one in Pamplona, where eventually several thousand tourists ended up sort of following him along through the streets. So, but the poem starts at 3 o'clock at right in front of Beinecke, and we'll leave from there. And we have an itinerary kind of worked out that we will go around. We'll go down as far as the Green, and so we'll be down on College Street for a little while and on the old campus and all over. So hopefully we'll pick up some interested passersby to become to join us on the poem as we go along.
I love when things like this happen in New Haven. Well, it's very rare that something just like this happens in New Haven, but I was going around on Saturday, and it was Pride Week last week. So there's just a lot of people in costumes, and it was just sort of unexpected and fun. And, you know, you're suddenly sort of challenged, and reality challenges you a little bit and is transformed. Do you think you'll come down as far as the Yale Art Gallery?
We plan on going, as far as I know, the last I heard, yes, we're going to go past the art gallery and then turn up York Street and head up that way, and eventually by, you know, Totes and Maury's and, you know, other, you know, landmarks sort of before we return to Beinecke. And so once we do that, then the opening of the show, the official opening reception, will begin at 5 o'clock. So it's going to be a good time.
And will the poet be speaking? We'll be talking.
He's not speaking, other than if you're interested in hearing Alain speak, the best thing to do is to show up early, because from 1:30 to 3 o'clock he's going to be whipping the letters into shape. So that he's doing a coaching session with us, and I'm almost looking forward to that as much as the poem itself. So he will explain all about the poem and, you know, how it works and what it's about and all of those things. So that starts at 1:30, also out on the plaza, if the weather's fine, which I hope it will be.
So he's someone who is in the show and is still a practicing artist, but it does go way back, and it does go to Dada. Certainly a lot of the early works seem to be French. There's quite a number of French artists.
There's some in the early. There are a lot. Certainly the you know, sort of if the Orsonata of Kurt Schwitters is the is sort of the origin of modern sound poetry, then the origin of modern visual poetry would be Stéphane Mallarmé's Coup de Dé. Starts with French symbolism, and then certainly a lot of the later folks are. But really, starting in France, the movement spread across Europe really quite fast. So one of the pieces that I really love in the exhibition is a little piece of Russian futurism, which we have laid out there in the cases. So it's Russians and Germans and French, and just, you know, and then at the end, this wonderful sort of compendium of all that marvelous experimental poetry of the modernist period that was done by a Georgian artist named Iliage, who left Eastern Europe with the Bolshevik Revolution and spent most of his career in Paris, but was certainly coming from the Slavic side.
So some of these are people were parts of other groups, Kurt Schwitters, and there were Dadas and Dadas, and but there were also, it seems like a lot of these people had very concrete and you know ideas and you know, manifestos, and they were parts of groups, and then they would splinter off into other groups. It was a real sort of you know, it seemed like a very political and you know, very really trying to do something different in a very intentional way.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the show really gets started in a big way with Lettrism, which is a movement that had all sorts of manifestos and was led by a Romanian Jewish refugee from Central Europe who arrived in Paris just at the end of the Second World War and really was determined to just set the town on its ear, and really did a lot to alienate a lot of people ultimately, so that Lettrism often gets left out of the story of experimental poetry and also of art. Lettrism was also very much tied in with the development of the visual arts in France in the post-war period, but you don't really hear much about it precisely because it was so virulently antagonistic toward the establishment and all of that.
One of the artists who I found most fascinating, I just love the invention and the creativity of so many of these people, just and sometimes with technology, trying things that had never been done before. And one person whose story is very compelling is Henri Chopin. Why don't you talk about him?
Yes, Chopin is really, also one of my favorites. And we were very fortunate to be able to acquire his papers, because just at the time we were acquiring them, he was featured in an exhibition at MoMA. And so suddenly he became much more well-known than he had ever been before. And so it would have been very difficult to be able to acquire the archive later. But everyone loves him. He's just, he's so full of energy. He's so inventive. And he also has this really wicked, mischievous, wonderful sense of humor that he's just a very charming individual. But in terms of his poetry, yes, he's extraordinarily radical. There were poets in the 50s who were already beginning to do a lot of things that were really quite new with sound poetry, but Chopin really drove it to a whole new level with his fascination with reel-to-reel tape recorders, magnetic tape, and the ability to record the human voice and hear things coming out of the human voice that no one had ever heard before, and then working with those and manipulating them. And he didn't stop just with the voice. He really became fascinated with the sounds of the human body and all the sounds that it makes all the time. And he explored those by using miniaturized microphones that he actually would swallow. He would swallow them all the way down to his stomach in order to hear what was going on down there. He said the body is like a factory. It never stops. It doesn't know silence. It just keeps going all the time. And that he was very surprised to learn that. He's really an amazing character. But he also, he's a kind of a tragic figure, too, in the sense that the way he learned to appreciate the sound of the human voice was on a death march through Europe at the end of the Second World War. He had been interned in concentration camps in Czechoslovakia and then in Germany during the war as a Jew and a French resistance fighter. And so the way he learned to appreciate the marvelous wonders of the human body and the sounds that it can make was by marching along with people who were speaking languages he couldn't understand on this horrible death march.
And
he took something that awful and turned it into something creative and wonderful. He's a curious character, and his sense of humor really. There's a one piece I really love in the exhibition, which is a novel that he wrote called The Last Novel of the World, and the hero of it is a farmhand who accidentally kills somebody, and then he starts killing tens and hundreds and eventually thousands of people until he's becomes so popular as a result of doing this that he's appointed president of the world. It's a story that's kind of grotesque and horrifying, but at the same time, the way it's written, it's just so ridiculous, it becomes funny. And that weird combination of all these things in a work that's also extremely experimental. It breaks down into visual and sound poetry over and over again. That is Chopin the poet in a piece. It really captures all these different conflicting sides of him that he brings together to create something quite wonderful and beautiful.
I was seeing if there's any of his works available online. I didn't see anything readily available through recording. You do, however, have a lot of listening stations throughout this exhibition, Ursula,
yeah.
That we heard going into this being one of those pieces.
Yes, there's several pieces by Chopin that you can hear. There are 14 stations in all, and that was quite a feat, something Beinecke has never done before. So I have to give a call out to my colleagues, Carrie and Megan, who really were the ones who made this work. It took a lot of ingenuity and kind of experimentation on our part to make that happen, but it's an exciting part of the show. For sure. We also have projections on the walls of digital poetry, which is something that's never been done before. So there's a lot of new things in the exhibition that were... So we were doing a little bit of our experimentation ourselves. A lot of fun.
Interesting. You're listening to listener-supported WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM. I'm Valerie Richardson. I'm speaking with Kevin Repp, who is the curator of European Modern Books and Manuscripts, and we're talking about an exhibition that is called Beyond Words, Experimental Poetry and the Avant-Garde, and this is at the Beinecke Library at Yale University through December 15th, just recently opened. It's a feast for the eyes, and I do so many, a lot of interviews about visual arts on my radio show, and it's always difficult because there's so much you can't talk about. So you can go to beinecke.library.yale.edu, and Beinecke is spelled B-E-I-N-E-C-K-E, and you can look at some of this. And in fact, you can download the catalog. That's pretty amazing. You have that available for people just to download.
Yes, absolutely. We have also hard copies that came out. It's quite a lovely thing. So if you happen to come to Beinecke for the opening or, on another day, please, feel free to pick up a catalog. That's what they're there for. But, yes, the whole text and all the images, the whole layout, everything is also available online through our website.
So why don't you talk about the piece that's the cover, Explosion?
Oh, right. This is a piece by one of the French experimental poets who's a younger fellow, a younger generation than Chopin, for example, who, as we were saying before, the World War II was really his formative moment, as it were. Julien Blain is part of a group of poets in France, experimental poets who became increasingly political in the 60s, sort of leading up to the uprisings of 68, in May 68 in Paris, and that sort of thing. And this is a wonderful piece of really what I would call concrete poetry. I mean, it really definitely conforms to the notion of concrete poetry, which is poetry that is focusing on the actual appearance of the letters, how they're configured on the page. The configuration of words and letters is almost more important than the words themselves. An explosion is a great one because the configuration on the page, it's really explosion is written in a circle and it seems to be exploding out into all these fragments of letters and that sort of thing. So it's quite a beautiful thing. And it's, it's got a great history, too. It was Gianni Bertini, Henri Chopin's great friend, an Italian painter, who transferred this this concrete poem the silkscreen process onto posters for a festival that actually never occurred. But that's a long story.
Well, that was one of the things that struck me, is that a lot of these poets were probably working very closely with graphic designers and experimenting with printing techniques and experimenting with typography. A lot of this is just so visual, and even though it probably is many decades old, I'm sure it sure influenced a lot of maybe even typography that became more mainstream.
This particular work, I think, is going to be something that's very interesting to people who work in graphic design. I'm not sure how much, you know, where their legacy is right now and how well known they are. They certainly all came to us as a surprise to me, and when I discovered them, and they did. I've heard at least one person say, "I thought I knew about this kind of thing, but I've never seen anything like this." You know, so there's a lot of new stuff in there. But certainly, I mean, the crossover between art and graphic design and visual poetry in particular is really one of the themes of the show that we explore. Johnny Bertini is himself a painter, but was working with experimental poets from the late 50s on to create all sorts of wild, what I would call happening type events. So installations where the decor would be by Bertini, and people would wander in and have an experience in there, that sort of thing. And Chopin and Bertini were practically inseparable when they weren't quarreling terribly. But a lot in France, in particular, there was a strong crossover: lettrism, the various offshoots of lettrism. Chopin and his friends and the people he was working with, between them and a movement called New Realism, Nouveau Realisme, which was a movement kind of created by an art critic named Pierre Rastani. And so that's kind of where art history comes in a bit to the show. It's very interesting to see how much of Nouveau Realisme actually emerges from a movement like Lettrism that no one's ever heard of anymore, or is entirely forgotten.
So another poet who plays really with sound, like the Kurt Schwitters Ursinate or the Henry Chopin, was Altagor, who took the, well, I guess in some ways sort of similar to Schwitters, but took poetry away from any words at all.
Yes, absolutely. And he did that quite early. He did started creating what he called metapoesie, metapoetry, in 1942-43 already. You can find the earliest pieces that he begins to think about this and think about the sounds, again, much like Chopin, the sounds of living human bodies and how important they are in a time of war to recognize those individuals. But he's just a fascinating character. One of the things about him is that he was a miner. He started off working in the mines on the western or the eastern border of France, a small town near the Mosel River, and so he came from nowhere and just on his own began creating this poetry that was very, very much in the vein of what you see these avant-garde poets then creating after the war, Chopin, the lettrists, and so forth. And so he went on then to another remarkable thing about him was that he was really, I think, if not the first, certainly one of the first sound poets who began working seriously with the tape recorders and also with radio broadcast. And one of the people that he worked with is in the radio broadcast and recording and working through his pieces is a fellow who went on to become very famous, Pierre Schaeffer, who was who's sort of one of the originators of concrete music, which involved using all sorts of devices and old gramophones, you know, turntables, tape recorders, and all these things, and just exploring the ways of that you could create electronic music out of these devices. So he's, you know, I can't imagine something like that happening today, you know, to come from the mines and become someone who is doing these incredible things and broadcasting on the radio and inspired an entire generation. And then, of course, he disappeared from sight. And the only way I know very much about him at all is that we have his papers here at Beinecke. I was able to acquire them. And I did that because I knew he was very influential on so many other people, but nobody really knows much about him. So this is the place to go. And in the exhibition, I was able to include one of the musical instruments that he devised specifically for his sound poetry. He wanted instrumentation that interacted in a very particular way with the timbres of the human voice. And his voice, to listen to Altagor is really quite a thrill, because his voice, the timbre of his voice is really something quite remarkable.
Yeah, that piece that's in the show looks a little bit almost like a hammered dulcimer, like a small hammered dulcimer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's hammered or plucked, or how he would make sound with it.
Well, actually, they're mallets. The mallets are made out of chopsticks. It's kind of funny. And there's the mallets are sitting on top of the thing, so it looks kind of like a steel guitar, if you can picture that. But it's meant to be played with these mallets.
I want to ask you sort of about the evolution of this whole movement, but before we get there, I want to talk about one of the other sort of signature pieces, which is by, it's called La Fin de Meaux, and it is literally a concrete poetry jumping way off the page.
Yes, it's a fin de mot, so it's literally the end of words, so it fit the bill perfectly for this exhibition. It's a typewriter. It's an actual typewriter that has been spray-painted gold, along with, it's by one of the other experimental poets, somebody who actually worked very closely with Julien Blen, whose poem is on the cover of the catalog that we were talking about before. But Marie glued large plastic letters onto the typewriter, and then little army men who seem to be fighting with the letters. So it's quite a it really gets you there with the idea that you know, language is something that should be viewed with great suspicion, and maybe even we need to make war on regular language in order to come up with a language that can suit human needs. But it's quite a lovely piece.
Now, along with people like the work that's going to be, the poem that's going to be created at the Beinecke and throughout Yale and the New Haven this Friday, an artist who has been doing this maybe for decades. How has this evolved? You're talking about how someone maybe wouldn't come in as a miner these days, but we're in such a do-it-yourself culture. People can do so much with anything.
That's true.
And disseminate it anywhere. To make art is so much an easier process these days.
It's true. I guess the thing that's different between now and then, one of the things is that there were these movements that were so, you know, kind of exclusive to outsiders and really kind of built up their cadre and asserted their position as the leaders in their fields, which I don't know anymore that there are groups out there that are really trying to do that so much. But that's what Altagor had to contend with, was, you know, lecherism, for example, which was a very coherent avant-garde movement of the, you know, the traditional French variety, which involved scandal and polemics and that sort of thing. So, but it's true that, you know, the digital age has really changed things and made, in fact, I think a lot of the kinds of things that you can see in the exhibition much easier to accomplish than they were at the time. And you can see that it continues to grow. I mean, Alain Ariamison, who did who's doing the public poem for us and always wanted letters to have body character, is now working in 3D with holograms. So there's actually a holographic poem. One of the highlights of the exhibition is Alain's holographic poem Eden, where you can see the characters. There are two figures who are composed entirely of letters and words that dance around an actual physical object in the holographic vitrine. So yeah, I think the story continues and it continues to move forward.
And what is the latest work that you have in the show?
The latest work, Alain's holographic poem, is certainly absolutely brand new. In fact, every few weeks he sends me a new version of it, so it's a little bit difficult to kind of nail down what exactly we're going to show. But there are also, I mentioned there were poems that are projected onto the walls, those are by a Canadian experimental poet named David Javet Johnston, and those poems, also the poem Rewrites, which he's coming here in a few weeks actually to read from that work, is a work that's in a sense still ongoing, but was really a work of the last year. So that's quite new.
So we're just about at the end of our time together. Why don't you talk again about the happening on this coming Friday? I'm looking forward to it.
Sure. I hope that everyone, or lots of you out there listening, can make it. It's something you won't see again, I'm fairly certain. it's called a public poem. It's an art form that Alain Ariamison, experimental poet, has been performing in since 1967, so for over 50 years. And it involves carrying giant letters out into the street and spelling words in front of various buildings and sites but it walks around town and it changes from one word to another and permutates. So the letter we have, the mother word, as he calls it, is transculturalism, and it will leave from Beinecke to become many other words at 3:00 on Friday afternoon, this coming Friday, September 27th.
And David Johnston is on Thursday, October 17th. And what is his nationality?
He's Canadian, although he did live, he was until fairly recently had been living in Hong Kong. So he's kind of an international sort of character.
Well, it's been a lot of fun speaking with you. And so what's your next project?
Next project. Boy, I don't know. I have to think about that. I've been so focused on this one, just getting it accomplished. But we'll see where, experimental poetry is really just one tiny part of a large map, which I actually drew last year when I was preparing to explain what I'm doing to a group of people. And I had to draw a map in order to do that. And so there are lots of other movements out there that I would love to follow in the way I've been able to follow these.
Well, it would be interesting also just to go into the digital or what are people doing today? I found the East German show so fascinating because that was such an underground show and it was a real do-it-yourself culture, the zines and everything. That was fascinating.
Absolutely, yeah. No, they really had to do it. And a lot of the movements that I'm looking at are, they belong to something I call the culture of protest, and it dovetails with experimental poetry in many ways. But there are certainly groups that are out there, underground or above ground counterculture type movements that are trying to present a different version of everyday life than what you maybe see portrayed in the in the normal channels of information. So
yeah, I think
it's
that,
a big world.
I think that's what I find so fascinating about this work too. It really is a transformative. If art is sort of the embodying the soul and taking it to new directions, a lot of what these works do is does that to the max.
Yeah, it's surprising. It's the thing that I think just floors me when I walk around the exhibition. Just how many different ways there are to go, you know, beyond the max, sort of.
So, well, thank you so much, Kevin Rupp, who is a curator of European Modern Books and Manuscripts. And we're talking about his exhibition, Beyond Words, Experimental Poetry and the Avant-Garde at Yale University's Beinecke Rare Book and Manuscript Library. And this is taking place through December 15th. And you can go to the website and download the entire catalog, which is quite fascinating. And you can see a lot of these images. So thanks again, Kevin.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Maybe I'll see you Friday.
I hope so.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to listener-supported WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM. We're online at WPKN.org. And we're serving Fairfield, New Haven, and Litchfield counties in Connecticut, Suffolk County, and New York's Long Island. We stream around the world at WPKN.org. Tune in radio, Radio Free America, and on our app, WPKN Live. And we have a lot of our podcasts, including the interviews I'm doing today, will be set up as separate finite elements that you can download, and those will be available. Our archives, which are on our website, which is pretty fabulous, WPKN.org. Our archives are available of any given show for 2 weeks, but they're podcasts of spoken interviews, social, cultural, political affairs will be there forever. And you can download them. Well, as long as the technology lasts, they will be there. And you can also go to WPKN.org and support the radio station. If you haven't recently, you can make a small contribution. You can make a large contribution. You can make a one-time contribution. You can set up so that you can do it large or small on a monthly basis, which I think is what a lot of us are doing these days. It's really a great way to sustain the radio station, budget, let us move forward and pretty much know to some extent what our funding will be over the next few months, few years. So thank you very much to all of you who have done that. And you can go to WPKN.org on the left-hand side and hit the donate button and do so yourself. So this has been a radio show today. I'm Valerie Richardson, by the way. I'm here on the second and fourth Tuesday afternoons now. I just switched recently. I alternate with Terry Hopper, who is on the first and third Tuesday afternoons with his excellent show called The Quest, a show that will also expand your boundaries of thinking and imagination in many ways. And on the fifth Tuesday is Oscar Gonzalez Barreto, who comes with jazz and all sorts of interesting discussions and movie reviews and political discussions and cultural discussions. So when there is a fifth Tuesday, he's here. He's also here frequently on other shows, Barricada on Saturday afternoons. So I'm here till 7, just about 7 o'clock. At 5 till 7, we have the local news. 7 o'clock, national and international news. 7:30, This Way Out. And 8 o'clock tonight, I haven't looked at the schedule, but it would normally be Jim Motovalli, who can sometimes be normal and sometimes be abnormal. He brings lots of interesting interviews and on many different topics. Anything from music, and he's a person of great curiosity, and he's always going out and finding new music and new ideas, and he's been here on the air for quite a long time. I'm sort of treading water here as I try to get the WPKN website up so I can actually confirm if I'm speaking the truth or not. So at just about 6 o'clock or so, I'll be joined in the studios by my good friend Suzanne Kachmar, who I haven't seen in a while. She is the director of City Lights Gallery here in Bridgeport. And we will be speaking also, I hope, with the curator Yolanda Petrocelli, who is the curator of the current exhibition, Neo-Latinismo. and they have a lot of different activities going on. Suzanne is also a person of great energy and imagination. So she should be stopping by in just a little bit. Yes, and Jim Motivalli is on tonight. 11 o'clock, we have a rebroadcast of the WPKN local news. 11 o'clock tonight will be, 11:05 will be Tom Poplawski with Radio Free Arcadia, taking you up until 2 a.m. when Alex Panda will be here with the Peak of the Night. So we are celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month here at WPKN. So thank